Take me where the promises are real.
Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip speaker meeting at the Naval Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story.
I'm Jill, I'm an alcoholic. Okay, this reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker walked into our 9:30 group. He was there for a few days, and finally I heard him share once. And so I came up to him after the meeting, and I said, did you come from, in a particular group that he came from, that my daughter was in? I don't know if I can say it or not, the anonymity. Did you come from Insight? He said, how did you know? And I said, well, my daughter sober for 8 years. It's a wonderful group for young people. And I don't know, he just had the look and the feel, and it sounded like, because he had this program. And he's one of those that I just really love to hear share. And I really appreciate the fact that he comes to our group. And because now he's taken over a position on Tuesday mornings, he helps us out by chairing the meetings, and that is a big help. And he's always willing. He never says no, just like when I asked him if he would do this. And so I'll give you yay.
Hey, I'm Gabe. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, guys. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Jill, for, I guess, getting me invited or inviting me or however that works. And thank you, Tim, and anybody else that had anything to do with me getting the opportunity to share my story tonight. I really appreciate it. I'm always really grateful for the opportunity to tell my story and to do any kind of service, which, as Jill mentioned, you know, whenever I'm asked to do service in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was taught to say yes. Because I feel, and I'll get more into this later, why I feel this way, but I do feel that I owe Alcoholics Anonymous a great debt. And I try to repay that on a daily basis by, you know, doing some things that I'll talk about later. But I guess I'll get right into it. I'll get my phone out, so I'll go over time. I guess my story starts in the same way as most people's, which is that I was born. And for me, that happened on April 10th of 1994. My sobriety date, by the way, is April 6th of 2009. That was not the first time I got sober, but it was the most recent. Yeah, cool, I guess. So I was born. What I remember about my early childhood is that I was born into a family, an entire family of alcoholics. There's no one in my family that is not an alcoholic. For me, was like a good and a bad thing, I think. But growing up, I didn't realize that any of the things that went on at my house were strange or different than the other kids' experience. And I was thinking before the meeting, and I often think about the way that my story has changed since I came into these rooms. Because when I first got here, what I would have told you is that I was raised by oppressive, horrible, abusive, no good, very bad, mean people. And that was true as I saw it when I got here. That wasn't me lying. But today what I can tell you is that I was raised by two alcoholics that were not in this program and that did not have a solution. I think that having experienced subsequently what I've experienced, I have a lot of I have a lot of sympathy for what went on when I was growing up. But one of the things that I think did have an impact on me was, like I said, you know, everyone in my family is an alcoholic, and that includes both of my parents. My mom was kind of like the get drunk, pass out, and that was the end of the night. So that was really it for my mom. My dad, however, was a different type. He didn't drink every night, but when he did drink, so I didn't know when he would drink, but when he did drink, you would get one of two things. You would get, like, the kind of, like, sit there, silent, brooding thing, or you would get the angry dad. That was a kind of like a constant thing growing up for me. It's like, oh, I want, and I didn't really think about it, I don't think, explicitly like this, but it was kind of like, I wonder which dad is going to be there tonight. Is it going to be the dad that comes home and is throwing things and screaming and yelling and doing all this stuff? And, you know, I think that might have, I don't want to get too deep into, like, the psychological weeds on this, but that might have affected, you know, the security of home. Like, home was never a secure place for me. Like, I never felt safe at home. I never felt like it was a place that I wanted to be, right? I never felt secure there. Which, again, I didn't realize was abnormal. I just thought that this is how it was for everyone. And part of that, part of the reason for that was I had a really difficult time making friends growing up, which is to say I didn't have any, maybe one. I might have had one friend up until I was like 13. I don't really know how to describe why it was so difficult for me to make friends, other than to say that I was very, very afraid of other people. So much so that I wouldn't really talk to them or reach out to anyone or speak a whole lot. So I was a pretty quiet person growing up. And what I can say about that is that I did notice that other people weren't that way, but and I didn't know why. Like, I could see that other people, like, in groups could hang out and have a good time and, like, be friends and connect with each other. And I could see, like, that connection happen. And I never experienced that connection with other people, and I didn't know why. You know, I didn't know what it was about me or about them that made it impossible for me to really get that connection and for me to really make close relationships. So that was kind of like the, I guess, the mental state that I grew up in. I would say I've been well and truly in love three times in my life. And the first time was when I discovered that you could kill yourself. I became very infatuated with the idea of doing that. Because up until then, I hadn't, like, as a kid, you don't realize that you can kill yourself. I don't know, whatever. So when I realized that, I thought it was like a cheat code. I was like, oh, that's a way out. Because my experience was, and what I believed about life was that it sucked, and there was nothing good about it. And if you didn't realize that, it was only because you were stupid. Like, that is, like, that's really what I thought about it. You know, the people that thought that life was cool and happy, you know, they just weren't, like, intelligent enough to realize that it's actually shit wall to wall. So I became really obsessed with this idea of suicide. Really, before I ever started to drink or use in any meaningful way, I tried to kill myself. And what that looked like for me was I took 22 of something that you really shouldn't take more than like 3 of. I do remember I was on the phone with someone at the time, and I remember fading out of consciousness. And I think that was like the first time, at least that I can remember, that I felt the release. Because what I thought was happening is I thought I was dying. So I thought it was over. And you know what I mean? Like, that was the first time that I'd ever felt that, like, calm. That you know what I'm saying? And then I passed out, lost consciousness. I didn't die. I woke up, in case you were worried. I woke up, and really, I didn't think about it a whole lot again. I was like, oh, bummer. I guess I'll, like, keep doing this for a little while. And I remember I went to Publix with my dad that day, and it was just like another normal day. I believe very strongly that alcohol, in all of its forms, saved my life, because it was very shortly after that experience that I found that release through alcohol and through drugs. Which I don't think I would have made it a whole lot longer had I not found that. Had I not found the thing that could make this turn off, which for me was alcohol, I don't think I would have survived a lot longer living with myself. Because that was just how uncomfortable I was all of the time. I was never comfortable in my own skin. So I started drinking, and as soon as I started drinking, I didn't really ease into it. There was no period where, like, I got drunk and it, like, I had a lot of consequences and then decided, oh, I want to do this. Like, the first time I drank, I got drunk and I experienced what I think a lot of us experience when we drink. And it was that sense of ease and comfort that I'd never, up to that point, really, except for the one time, ever experienced. And what it did for me is it allowed me, and this is my experience, it allowed me to connect with the people around me. That's what alcohol always did for me. It allowed me to feel like a part of. My entire life I've been obsessed, and I really mean obsessed, with the way that I feel. I've been absolutely infatuated with how I feel. And it's driven me to do a lot of things to change how I feel. Because up until I found alcohol, I always felt terrible. Like, it wasn't like, sometimes I feel great, sometimes I feel sad, which might be how it is for normal people. For me, it was like, I felt awful all the time. And what alcohol did is it made me feel good. And it allowed me to connect with other people. And it took whatever had been in between me and you for my entire life away. Right? And so I did it all the time. Because that's, like, for me, the next logical step. Like, oh, okay, if it does this, I should do it all the time. And so I did. And it was great. It was the second thing in my life that I absolutely fell in love with, was drinking. And it worked for me really, really well. In terms of changing how I felt, right? I mean, you know, as far as it did until it didn't anymore, but I'll get to that in a second. I had a lot of consequences almost immediately. Like, I got caught the first time I ever got drunk. Like, I started getting, like, all these things taken away. I don't like to spend a lot of time on my drinking and using career. The one thing that I will say about it is that my experience with alcohol was I was never able to control and enjoy my drinking. I think maybe one time I controlled it, which is to say, like, I had, like, two beers and then forced myself to fall asleep or something. But that was not an enjoyable experience for me. Every time I drank, with no exception that I can readily bring to mind, I got drunk. I drank for effect. And it didn't feel like a choice. But it also didn't feel compulsory in the beginning. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like, oh, I'm doing this because it's fun and I'm doing this because I want to in the beginning. Now, when I started to have consequences, I did attempt, you know, a couple times to stop or to moderate. And the longest that I ever went was 22 hours, I think, was the longest that I could ever stay sober on my own outside of these rooms. And I just couldn't do it anymore because I just couldn't live inside my head and inside my life without something to ease and to dull whatever pain was going on with me. But yeah, like I said, I started to get a lot of consequences. I got in legal trouble. My parents started to do this funny thing. Because my parents, like I said, everyone in my family is an alcoholic, and I'm the youngest of four children. So my parents got to see what happens when you, like, let an alcoholic do their thing or whatever when they're a teenager. And it didn't wind out well for any of my older siblings. So with me, they were a little more strict. They started doing this really funny game where they threatened to call the police, like all the time. They'd be like, hey, if you, like, whatever, fail this drug test, or you get drunk, or you go, like, we'll call the police. And I was like, all right. So I called their bluff. And they called the police. And the police would come and take you to jail. And it's crazy. Like, you can do that. Because I was a minor, obviously, at the time. And I didn't think you could do that. But as long as your parents say so, they can just take you to jail. And so, like, all right. So I started going to jail. And that was not a fun experience for me. I did not enjoy being arrested and detained as a 13-year-old. It was not that cool. So very quickly what started to happen for me is I realized that what I was doing was unsustainable. I couldn't sustain, going to jail, getting out, drinking one time, and then going back to jail. What kind of life is that? I was like, this is terrible. So I was like, all right, well, I just need to kill myself. So I came up with this crazy, super elaborate plan that involved, me writing in a diary every day for 30 days before I killed. It was this crazy, narcissistic, just gross thing. Which, again, I didn't wind up going through with, as you can probably tell. I remember my parents decided, eventually my parents were like, all right, this is enough. You've got two options. You can go to military school or you can go to rehab. So I chose military school. And I went there and I was checking out the campus and it was, I don't remember which one it was. I wish I did, but it was a really beautiful campus, huge. They had crazy stuff, an outdoor paintball course and all this stuff. And it was really awesome. But about 30 minutes in, I realized something was kind of off about it, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And about an hour in, I realized what it was, and it was that there were no girls. And so I chose rehab, and I remember my mom picked me up from school one day. She really did that thing, oh, we're going to the circus or whatever, but I don't remember what she said we were going to do, but we wound up at rehab. And I had a meeting with the head counselor, and God, he was such a weirdo. He was a really nice and good guy and whatever, but I thought he was weird at the time. He said a bunch of stuff. The only thing that I really remember him saying is he said, I don't work for your parents. I don't work for the police. I work for you. And I was like, oh, that's neat. And the other thing he said was, look, we're not going to make you do anything, but what I would suggest is give it 30 days. He was like, if your life isn't better in 30 days, leave. We're not going to keep you here. You're not forced to be here. Do whatever you want. And that kind of take it or leave it message really, really kind of spoke to me. And it was, I think, my first experience with attraction rather than promotion. He was kind of like, we're going to show you what we have. And if you don't want it, don't take it. And so that gave me enough willingness to all right, well, what do you got? And I remember I walked back into what I thought was going to be a room with a bunch of white coats, and it was actually this kind of dirty room, similar to this, but if it was designed, not that this is dirty, it was like a dirtier version of this. But if it had been designed by 15-year-olds. The first person that walked up to me, walked up immediately. He was a 17-year-old dude with long, shaggy hair, wearing a bright green shirt that said Ronnie's Sex Shop. And he offered me a cigarette. And I was probably this tall, looked like a 14-year-old kid because I was one. And I was cool. Yeah, I want a cigarette. Let's go smoke a cigarette. And I don't remember a lot about that night, and I don't remember a lot about the first 30 days of my sobriety. What I can tell you is I had really no interest in getting sober when I got there. I did get sober in treatment. It's not a plug for treatment. It's just my experience is how it happened for me. And I'm grateful for the people that were there and the way that I got sober. It worked really well for me. Again, I don't really remember a lot. I don't know what exactly happened. I think the closest that I can try to approximate describing what happened for me is I had never seen, granted I grew up with alcoholics and I knew what alcoholism looked like actively, but I'd never seen a sober alcoholic in terms of, I'd seen my dad sober, but that was not cool. I'd never seen someone who had taken hold of these principles and worked them in their life and became happily and usefully whole. I'd never seen that in a person before. And I think that what happened in that first little while is I understood and believed that these people were like me. So the process of identification had taken place for me. And I saw that they were happy. And I'd never seen those two things in a person at the same time. And I think that what that did for me is it enabled me to believe that it could work for me. I still didn't think it would, but I thought that it could. And I was talking to somebody the other day about kind of the first little bit of my sobriety, and I really do believe that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself and relieved the obsession to drink when I got to you guys. But I don't know how to describe that process and what really actually happened. And someone, when I was talking to them, said, well, yeah, I mean, how can you describe a miracle? And I really do think that that's what happened. I do think that God did for me what I could not do, and I really don't know how to explain it other than to tell you that that is what happened for me. Because the desire to drink and use was removed when I got here. And I managed to stay sober about, I think it was 3 weeks, just by like osmosis, like just by being around you guys. But I didn't work the steps. I didn't get a sponsor like you guys told me to. And so I didn't have an effective mental defense against the first drink like I always had. And I remember one day with no intention of drinking, no intention of doing anything. Like my life had gotten infinitely better than it just in the 3 weeks that I'd been with you guys. And I left my house and I didn't come back sober. And that scared me a lot, right? Because I was happy. My life was good. I had no intention or desire to drink, and I did anyway. And so I came back to you guys and I told you what happened, and you kind of let me know the deal. You guys let me know, like, hey, you really do need to get a sponsor. You really do need to work these steps. You need to, not like you were telling me I had to, but you were saying, if you want what we have, if you want perfect release from the bondage of alcoholism, this is what we've done, and this is how it worked for us. And so I did get a sponsor, and I started working the steps. And what I'll say about my experience working the steps is that I fought this program tooth and nail at every turn I possibly could. I wanted to intellectualize a lot of this stuff. I wanted to build rational arguments against doing the things that the people that had what I want were telling me to do to get it. That didn't really matter, because at the end of the day, yeah, I would argue and I would be stubborn and I would think that I knew best. But at the end of the day, I would do the next step. Begrudgingly, I'll give it to you. Yeah, absolutely. And it didn't make a ton of friends in the beginning. I didn't. I must have been awful to be around. But I really didn't. But that wasn't what was important. What was important is that I always did, at the end of the day, take that step. First step was really difficult for me because I didn't understand that my life was unmanageable. Because for me, what had happened was everyone around me made my life bad. It wasn't my fault. It was my parents. It was the judge. It was the police. It was my teachers. It was everything. It was my outpatient counselor. It was everything outside of me. And so, like, again, really, I fought this thing. And someone once said to me, you know, if your life isn't unmanageable, what part of your life plan was winding up in rehab before your 15th birthday? And I was like, all right, you got me there. Let's move on. And that's really kind of how this thing went for me, is I would argue up until a point where I couldn't really rationalize arguing any further. And I'd be like, all right, fine. And I would move on to the next thing. I really did do that with probably the first seven steps, I would say. God was a really tricky concept for me coming in. I had gone to Catholic school growing up, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I just didn't enjoy really the concept of God that I associated with the Catholic Church when I was that age. I kind of thought that if I were going to continue in this program, I had to believe in that God. And I think that for me, the most powerful line in the book is when Ebby's talking to Bill and he says, why don't you choose your own conception of God? That I wouldn't be here if that line weren't in the book. If the book said, you know, you're going to have to get on board with this Christian God, then I wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? Like, my first higher power was a song. It was. And the way that I prayed was I listened to that song. And that worked for me for long enough for me to figure something else out. The song, just in case you're interested, is Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. Great song. But that was it. That's what I did. That's how I prayed. And the third step for me, I really like to get like into the philosophical weeds with the stuff. And it was after like a while of doing that, basically what the third step came down to for me was, are you willing to do a fourth step? Yes, okay, let's do a fourth step. And that's about all that I really had to do for my experience for the third step. And writing my fourth step was, the first one, it was really difficult for me to see my part in certain things. And it reminds me, when I first got to you guys, I can read. So I saw what the ninth step said about making amends. And what I thought that meant is having to say sorry to everyone in my life. And my reaction to that was, okay, I'll do this thing, but what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to say sorry to my parents. I'm just not going to do it. And I would get, you know, I'd get like really fired up about it. And be like, if your parents did to you what mine did to me, you wouldn't say sorry either. Roar. And people would be like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, no one's like trying to force you to do anything. Calm down. And you guys were just kind of like, all right, cool. Like, we'll get to that later. And if, when you get to the ninth step, if you don't want to do your parents, don't do your parents. Like, whatever. And that was really, you know, that was cool for me. So when I got to the fourth step and I started writing my part to play in these things, some of my part to play was that I held on to the resentment. And that was as best as I could do in my first fourth step for some of the things that had happened. Because that was true. And I was also told not to think about reading it when you write it, which was really good advice for me, so I just like to say that. So I read it, and what happened is I had no sense of real relief. Like, I did not feel like a weight had been lifted when I read my first fifth step. I didn't have any white light experience in my hour with God. Like, nothing really that intense happened. But what did start to happen gradually is I stopped feeling like I was stealing someone's seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I started to feel like I was a part of this deal and that I belonged here. Which, you know, minus drugs and alcohol, I'd never felt that way sober before. I'd never felt like I belonged in a group of people before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and worked the first five steps. You know, I didn't, my first experience, and, you know, I really like the part in the book that was read right before I started, because I do think that when I tell my story, it's my job to try to describe how I came to have a relationship with a power greater than myself. Higher power for me is the reason that I believe that I'm sober today. It's the reason that I continue to be sober. And the way that I got in touch with that was through working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I try to describe a little bit about what the first time for me doing that was like. And really the next big kind of milestone was the ninth step. And what I realized at the ninth step was, by the time I'd gotten to it, I still didn't want to make amends to my parents. You know, I didn't want to have to sit across a table from them and talk about my part to play in anything. But the conclusion that I'd kind of come to is that I was willing to do it. And so I did. And I sat down across from my parents and I didn't mention a single thing that they'd ever done to me. And I made amends for the harm that I'd caused in our relationship. And that was a really powerful experience for me. And what started to happen is, for me, is that when I made that amends, and that's just the one that sticks out the most for me, but with other amends too. When I made amends for my part, I started to let other people off the hook. And I started to forgive my parents for the things that I, you know, perceived they'd done wrong to me, which is something that I didn't think would happen for me. You know, I didn't realize that it was possible to get free of that stuff. But through effective sponsorship, doing a thorough and fearless inventory, and having the willingness to make amends in the ninth step, I'm free of all that today. I don't walk around resentful at my parents today. Which again, for me, is a miracle. Like, that's, I don't say like, oh, I did this awesome thing and whatever. No, it's like, you know, I think God did that for me with a little bit of willingness for myself. I will give a quick plug to page 83 from the 10th step, because I love it so much. It's the one thing that kind of, and I won't be able to quote it directly, that kind of like walking around day to day has changed my life more than anything. It's the part where it talks about, like, when we become upset, you know, when fear and selfishness and all these things crop up. It gives four very clear instructions of what to do, which is, I ask God to remove them. I speak with another alcoholic. I make amends if I need to, and then I resolutely turn my attention to someone that I can help. And if I can do those four things when I'm disturbed, the freedom that comes from that for me today, this is something I still do today. It's insane. It's incredible. It's stuff that I didn't realize, like, really could happen. Like, I'd read the promises in the book and I'd be like, oh yeah, that's like cute. Like, I thought it was like sales stuff, you know, like, oh, you buy this, you'll get this. I didn't really realize that it was people actually saying, no, this is what has happened for us because we were willing and did this. And that's been my experience. I do want to talk about briefly, the third thing that I've been well and truly in love with in my life has been Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this program. I love the people in it. I love the meetings. I love absolutely everything about it. It's been the joy of my life to have the opportunity to work with newcomers, to work with other men, to sponsor people, to see the light come on, and not to take credit in any way, but to be a part of it is... for me, it's the most fulfilling experience I've ever found. It's the thing that works for me when all else fails. I think it saved me from drinking more times than I'd like to admit, because one thing that I do want to say is that I've not worked this program perfectly since I got here. There's a part in our book that talks about the jumping off point, and it talks about basically what I would consider a dry drunk, and when you get to the point where you can't imagine life with or with alcohol, be it the jumping off point and wish for the end. I've been there in sobriety. With 9 years sober, I had to give up my guns to a safe that I didn't have access to because I'd gotten so far away from this program and for the principles outlined in the steps. And what saved me every time is coming back to you guys, being honest, being willing to just kind of, you know, do that four-step inventory type stuff. And then to throw, pardon the expression, but this is something we said a lot when I got sober, to throw my ass into service, because that's what's worked for me. And service looks like a lot of different things for me today. The most obvious one, yeah, is sponsoring people and working with newcomers and doing all that. But it can be showing up to a meeting. It can be reading before a meeting. It can be chairing. It can be a lot of different, giving people rides. It can be a lot of different things. Just being present and, paying attention. You know what I mean? Like, that type of thing really has been the joy of my life. And I'm just really grateful that this deal has worked for me, and I believe that it will work for other people. I guess I want to say thank you to you guys, because I really do believe that you guys are the reason that I'm sober today. And what I mean by that is, when I got here, I didn't have friends. Like, I didn't have, like, maybe two people that, like, I hung out with, but, like, they weren't friends. Like, I didn't know how to have a conversation with people. You know what I mean? Like, I very literally, in every way, grew up in this program. My sobriety date is 4 days before my 15th birthday. I will have 10 years, God willing, in the next 2 months, I'll have 10 years sober at 24. I grew up in this program. I owe my life to this program. And it's because you guys were willing to do service. You guys were willing to do the stuff that today sometimes I don't feel like doing. You guys were willing to talk to me 5 minutes after it became uncomfortable for you to talk to me, which is amazing. Like that's the deal right there. No act of service is ever too small in Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing. You know, like when I... And not that, like, I'm, like, super service guy, but, like, you know, like, when I get the opportunity to talk to a newcomer or to be of service or to reach out and give back in some capacity, I'm always, not that I always really want to do it, because, sure, there are times, like, I don't feel like it, like, you know what I mean? But every time that I do, I'm always grateful that I did it. I'm always grateful for the opportunities that are afforded to me in these rooms to be of service and to give back, because like I said earlier, I do believe that I owe a great debt to Alcoholics Anonymous. That debt is my life. Everything in my life today I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. I would say the fact that I'm alive, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. My job, all my relationships, all my friendships, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous and to the principles outlined in the steps in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it, and it's been amazing. And you know, I did grow up in this program. Everything that I've learned, you know, I learned how to have a job. Like I learned how to show up to school and to show up to work. I learned how to be there for my family, which I didn't know how to do. You know, I learned how to go to a wedding when my sister got married. I learned how to be there for my sister when she had a kid, which, like, I've got a nephew. That's crazy. You know, and unfortunately, like, my sister's husband died of this disease. And I learned how to go to a funeral in this program and how to show up. You guys taught, because that's something that I was never able to do before I got here. I was never able to show up for life. You know what I mean? If I did happen to physically show up, I would have to be so intoxicated that I wouldn't be able to, like, really participate. You guys taught me how to show up in every area, whether it's good or bad, and how to experience with other people the good and bad of life, and I'm really grateful for that. And like I said, any time I'm asked to be of service, I'm grateful for that. So, again, thank you, Joe, for inviting me. Thank you, anyone who had anything to do with me being here. Thanks, everybody, for showing up and for listening, and thank you for my life.
First I slip and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me and finally wake and there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. I look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real. And I always long for something that sets me free. Take me.